Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot. And believe it or not, we are still on the road talking to you from a campground that you could be near us in.
Well, how long have we been gone?
We left Florida mid-April.
So but we left home...
October.
So we are now almost on the way home.
I'm kind of looking forward to being home.
Could be nice.
It's been a long, long time.
We do keep an eye on it with our Waze camera so that we can see what's going on, and you missed the daffodils.
I did. Oh. I saw them in the camera. I'm glad they're taking care of themselves. I only have plants that take care of themselves at my house. And we travel with one spider plant that I carried in the motorhome.
In and out of the shower. God, this woman.
I carried in the motorhome
to Florida.
She's so dedicated
to her plants.
And left it in Florida. It flourished without my tender, loving neglect. And now we are schlepping it
home
again.
Just like your husband.
You feel neglected?
Oh, no.
So before we get too much farther, we should say this is episode 229 of the RV Navigator Podcast. What else do we
usually say? For May of 2024, as the 70s come to the Chicagoland area, we are headed north.
Actually, I think it's warmer today in the Chicagoland area
yes,
than it is here in
Florida.
Kansas City. I must say that being in Kansas City is disconcerting when we turn on the TV set, because there are tornadoes everywhere. And we are headed to northern Iowa, where there are tornadoes everywhere. And I'm thinking back to my younger days, and I don't remember being quite so concerned about weather. Wherever it was we were going.
And why is that?
Climate change.
No.
We're well informed.
Because the weathermen have become much more sophisticated, and they can predict the weather much more accurately, and they give you they scare the living daylights out of you every time you turn on the forecast and there's a little bit of rain around. But with that said, coming home in the spring is a problem because you do run across this weather, and we there were tornadoes yesterday, no question about it.
North of us and south of us.
Yeah, and we fortunately drove here to Kansas City, and it was a very pleasant drive without any significant rain. And
some wind.
Without any, yeah, well, yeah. Really helps to have a powerful southern wind.
At your back.
Which
almost
really...
Almost, what, doubled your gas mileage?
Oh, made it great. Boy, the motorhome loves it, so...
We were a big sale.
But you do have to watch out in the springtime, because the weather is iffy, and we don't think about that down in Florida, where it's nice every day.
Oh, I thought about it. I thought about, every time it was in the news, how are we going to get home? What route are we going to take? Would it be better just to zip home over 3 days? That's what it usually takes us, or mosey. And
we are mosey.
Even though we have been gone with the motorhome for many, many months, we haven't really been in the motorhome for many, many months. As you know, if you listen to us regularly, we've had 2 cruises since we left home. The approach we're taking on the way home to do a bit of moseying, do a bit of sightseeing, to me, that's what RVing is all about. And not just getting on a expressway and driving like a bat out of hell as fast as you can to get to your next destination. Now that we're retired, we don't have to do that anymore.
Exactly. People are anxiously awaiting for the results of the family 5-day cruise aboard the Independence of the Seas. How did it go?
So, you want to talk about the wonderful family cruise.
The wonderful family cruise.
Since it
Not
was,
my family.
Since it was my family, I'll let you talk about it.
Oh, no. 22 people inside cabin.
Well, I have to publicly and repeatedly thank you for agreeing to do this with me.
We don't have to do that. I'm always happy to go on a cruise.
On a cruise. It fulfilled my wishes and then some. As I think we probably said last month, my family has never lived near us, and we have little time to be together. First, I was the working stiff and very busy, and now they are the working stiffs and very busy. And so to get together and get to know their kids a little bit was such a treat for me. And they even though some of these 22 people were not our family, they were their other friends. They were very good about including us in anything that we wanted to be included in. And being in that small cabin for 5 nights was really no big deal.
But it goes to show the difference in cruise ships, and that short cruises are very different than the long cruises that we're used to, and that as a potential cruiser, you should consider these options, that a 5-day cruise is going to be basically a booze cruise. That's all partying, and probably on any ship. But this particular ship was very oriented toward young people. It had tons of active activities, slides and games and crazy things that we don't participate in.
Which was good because there were 1,400 kids on
board. Yeah, 1,400.
1,400 kids on board.
Out of the 4,500 passengers, which it was absolutely packed.
And another thing I want to add, after we got back, I read an article that made me think about it all again, which had to do with choosing shore excursions and how do you know by the description of the shore excursion if it fits your athletic abilities. Now, of course, in my old age and never having been an athlete, I have special concerns in that area. But as the article pointed out, if you are a young, fit person, you don't want to end up on a shore excursion with somebody like me because you won't get a lot out of it. And they kind of reminded me that you need to pay attention to what kind of a cruise you are on, who are the other people who are going to be on that ship with you. Certainly anything you did on the cruise we took with our family had to be oriented toward young, fit, active people, not to geezers, which is what we have come to expect on some of the longer cruises that we have taken that are either limited to over 55s or are too long for anybody who's working to take. So when you read the descriptions of the words, that doesn't always give you enough of a clue, in my opinion, having to look at that more closely now that I've had a knee replacement. But you need to think about it as a young person, too. You don't want to be bored or feel like you have to wait for somebody to be climbing the hill behind you. That would be very frustrating.
Yeah. And this ship had all the stuff that kids enjoy doing, I thought. The kids' pool area was just full of fabulous little things that kids would love to do.
And the climbing wall.
Surfing.
But
that's for the older kids. But so this ship was definitely oriented toward families and toward short cruises. Now, we have often done a Holland America cruise, which the ship is a little bit smaller, and it has none of those capabilities. It's basically oriented towards entertainment and towards calm sitting by the pool. So, you know, you have to look at the cruise line and the cruise ship before you decide to do a cruise, because it's going to very much impact your enjoyment of the cruise. Does the ship fit your needs? And of course, if you're doing a little bit of upscale, you want to consider the cabins also. This cabin was 150 square feet, whereas the last one we had was 350 square feet. This one didn't have a balcony, but we had a nice view of the promenade.
And people discoing below us very, very loud. Luckily, they shut it down at 11 p.m., which was early enough in the evening for us to get a night's sleep.
And, of course, everything was crowded, and that's what happens when you go prime season. The ship was packed. It had tons of kids, which we expected, and we understood, but it would not be our normal cruise experience, and it, you know, might not be yours either.
And we really like anytime dining because we like to do things when we like to do things, and that, of course, is totally impractical when you're traveling with a group of 22 people. One of our nephews organized a seating plan with 3 tables close together, and we could rotate even within that plan.
But basically, there were 2 adult tables and 1 kids'
table. And that
tables.
Worked very well, and we had to eat at 5:30 because there were little kids with us, and they would have passed out if we'd eaten any later.
It is what it is. So we did enjoy it, and we're glad we did. The drive down to Florida, down to Miami, was no problem. Parking our car was no problem. So for the 5 days, so all the details worked out quite well, and the efficiency
and the
of getting
thing,
on the ship.
We
was
never
good.
Had to get out our passports. Remember when we came back to Miami?
We just had to show them to get on, and that was it.
And they took a picture of our face,
right,
some
I
kind
know.
Of photo recognition thing. So that was very fast.
Disembarkation
too.
was
amazingly
extremely fast. Well, we want to update our lithium battery. battery install. I have made an appointment for mid-July to get our coach transitioned to lithium batteries. They're going to, they answered all of my questions. They're going to redo the and enclose the battery compartment. We're getting two 330 amp batteries and all of the associated equipment. And the thing I want to talk about briefly is the fact that if you connect this with solar, that you get a 30% tax rebate.
At the moment.
At the moment. Well, this year. So I hadn't really planned on getting any extra solar panels, but they convinced me that by saving $2,500, I could increase our solar capacity. So I'm having them put on one additional solar panel, and by having them do that, that gets me 30% off of the whole project. So that'll be quite interesting, and you're going to want to stay tuned in July when we have that done, because it's going to mean our boondocking capabilities are going to be expanded.
And why don't you want to cover the roof with solar panels, as some people do?
Well, we don't do that much boondocking, and I've been pretty happy. We have three panels right now. I've been pretty happy with how they keep things going. But having one more is, you know, that's an advantage. I just didn't think it was necessary for the kind of traveling that we do.
I thought you liked to wander around up there.
Well, that's another issue. I will be interested to see where they put it, because I do like to have some space on there, because I like to clean it and, you know,
fix things.
And but I think that overall this will be a good thing to have. And can't have too many solar
panels. This installation project is promised to be done in a day. Is that correct?
That's what they tell me.
Uh-huh.
The solar panel really shouldn't be much of an issue, because all the wiring is there and the controller is all there. So that shouldn't be too much. So it's installing the batteries and putting in new electrical components that are necessary to keep the house batteries and the chassis batteries charged and connect up the alternator and all that sort of good stuff. So it's going to be an interesting project, and one which is long needed. And for our trip to Alaska, I'm hoping that this will provide us with a lot more boondocking capabilities.
Even though I don't think we'll need to boondock. Well,
no.
Not when we're on the pier.
Yeah, but it will just be an overall benefit, I think. And we won't have to buy new batteries again in this coach. That's one of the biggest things. These batteries are 5 years old, and it's time to get new batteries. And do you spend $1,800 to get new AGMs, or do you spend a few more bucks and just say that's it for the life of the coach? Because these batteries are guaranteed for at least 10 years, and probably even longer, and many more. We've talked about this ad nauseum. I did want to update the podcasting transcript feature that is now incorporated into the Apple Podcast app, which is very cool. I mentioned that we probably were going to have a transcript of last month's podcast available should you want to read about the RV Navigator podcast. But what happened is that when I went back and actually checked it, I see that if you listen to the podcast in the app and you look at it on your screen, you follow along. The transcript follows along with what we say.
If we don't enunciate clearly enough.
So it's kind of like having subtitles that you can read.
And I've seen programs on TV that many people at home like to watch movies with subtitles,
I was reading that too. That's
language and hearing is not a problem, so maybe this will be a real blessing.
And it's available for free, which is also very cool. And so we mentioned last month that you might want to take a look at the transcript feature. You can download the transcript and you can
skim it,
but even more importantly, you can search it. So if you're looking for something that we talk about, some product or thing, you can do a search, and hopefully you'll find it in the transcript and then be able to link to the HTML.
It would be faster than trying to listen to the whole program again.
But of course, everything that we talk about is always on the RV Navigator podcast webpage for this episode 229, and you'll find that at rvnavigator.com. Click on the link for the current episode, and you will see all of the links for this page, as well as the calendar. Oh, I did a neat calendar this
month. It's a beauty. And it's a real picture that you really took with your own camera.
Yes, and we went out and shot the launch of the Starlink satellites, and that's what this month's picture is. Well, you haven't seen it yet. because they have 50 launches this year already.
This is the podcast for May, and I just downloaded the May calendar, which had fish.
That's true, but I'm always working on next month, okay. So this is the June picture.
But this is May.
I realize that, but this is the June picture, and the June picture is of a Falcon 9 launch from Peacock's pocket. And it's a very nice picture, and it's not nearly as cluttered. I went from super cluttered in the fish picture to this, which
well, you can't find any of your files on your desktop.
But I've been amazed at the launching of the satellites and the Starlink links. They've got almost 6,000 satellites now in the air, which gives coverage in lots of parts of the world and increases the coverage for the United States, which has dramatically improve the speeds.
You were saying as we wandered around our last few campgrounds that you didn't see as many RVers using Starlink as you expected?
Well, I don't know. It's pretty easy to see when somebody's
when
using Starlink.
On the antenna.
And we have been in some fairly wide open. I mean, like at the campsite that we're here now, I don't see anybody having Starlink.
No.
But who knows? You could have it mounted on just on the top of your rig.
On the roof?
Yeah, you can have it mounted permanently on the rig. But most of the time, people have it on some sort of
a
pole so that you can pretty easily see it. Because you want to get it up as high as you can because it has to have a view of the sky, not just a specific spot in the sky. So Starlink has become very useful for RVers. And for $150 a month, you get unlimited service, which is pretty good these days. And the nice thing about it is that you can turn it on and off so that you can, when you're not using it, you can say, no, I don't want to have it on.
Pay as you go.
It's pay as you go, which is a good way for many RVers who are using it on and off. But we have been very happy with the hotspot that we have because we got that with our phones from T-Mobile.
Bundled together.
We do. We know.
Yeah.
We're paying an extra, besides our phones, we're paying an extra $30 a month for an unlimited hotspot. Yeah. Now, this is interesting because it's called a home hotspot or a home internet is what they're really calling it. And they are trying to compete, and 5G is good enough to compete with wired internet. At home, I have Comcast or Xfinity wired internet, and I get very good service, very low latency and very high speed. However, I gotta say that this T-Mobile hotspot that we have here in the motorhome is rivaling wired, and that I think is because of 5G. 5G has lower latency and much higher speeds. Here in this campground right now, we are getting on the order of 400 megabits a second download and 50 or 60 upload, which is amazing for a wireless device.
And with our part-time lifestyle, it's very easy once we get home to bring this device in the house. It's there if we need it. It's there if somebody saws through our Wi-Fi.
Yeah, we can have it as a backup at home.
As
but
they did once,
for $30 a month, we say, okay, you can't turn it on and off.
Uh-huh.
It's designed. And the thing is, you need to talk to your carrier and say, well, I'd like to switch to home internet with my cell service. And they will say, oh, we have a great plan, and you don't tell them that you're taking it on the road.
Because they can't tell, can they?
They probably can, but they don't care.
They don't care.
So rather than getting yourself just a hotspot, which is more expensive, you can get yourself this
home service.
They're offering you a low price because they're trying to compete with the wired service that many people have with their cable company. And you just put it in your motorhome or your trailer and you take it with you. And so far, it worked all the time in Florida. It's worked everywhere. It's worked for the last 9 months or so that we've had it on the road here. And it's been great. It has worked everywhere, hasn't it? And it allows us to stream and do everything that we would ordinarily do at home.
You don't have to worry about whether you're under a tree.
That's correct. I think when we go to Alaska, I'm going to get Starlink to give it a try. And I think in Alaska, we'll probably need it because we'll be in much more remote locations. But for the kind of camping that we've been doing around here, and we have been to two or three state parks, we've been to the COEs, we've been in some remote areas, and I was in deep forest. Last night we were in a very deep forest. It was raining, but we were getting great internet through the hotspot that we have.
While we're talking about wires, we should also mention our broken wire. Does it have a specific name? It's the wire that goes from our car to
the umbilical.
Our motorhome and transmits electricity necessary to activate the car lights and the brakes.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, there are a lot of twisty, windy roads in Arkansas, at least where we were. It came undone and dragged on the ground, which wrecked it. We didn't notice it soon enough, so it's a goner.
So this is a coiled umbilical cord connecting the motorhome and the car.
So when we got to Bentonville, home of the Walmart Art Museum known as Crystal Bridges, we went to the Camping World there and were quite sure that they would have such a wire, but they did not. They had components of that wire, and the friendly and helpful staff there dropped what they were doing and tried to manufacture for us a replacement wire. It wouldn't be coiled.
Well, it needed a different end.
But it could plug into the motorhome and plug into the car. And we were very grateful to them for their can-do attitude and their friendliness, and we wanted to give them a shout-out. If you're ever in Bentonville, Arkansas,
the Camping
people at
World.
Camping World are very nice and very helpful.
Yeah, Camping World gets kind of a bad rap lots of times, and I think it has to do with the individual franchises, but the one in Benton, Arkansas.
Bentonville,
Arkansas.
There's also a Benton, Arkansas.
That's true. Okay, so this was Benton, which probably has a Camping World. This was, and why were we in Bentonville?
As I said, we were there to visit the Crystal Bridges Art Museum.
Art museum. I went to an art museum.
And you liked it.
Oh, my God.
We really recommend it. I have some ambivalence about how it is funded. It was created by the daughter of Sam Walton, the creator of Walmart. Certainly when Walmart came out, I had a lot of bad feelings about how they treated their employees, very poorly paid, didn't give them any benefits. The Walmarts were kind of dingy and smelly. But over time, oh yeah, the other thing I didn't like is that they were putting many of our local grocery stores out of business because they were cheaper. But over time, especially as an RVer, when you have 14 things on your shopping list, and some of them are hardware and some of them are produce, it's so easy to take care of it all at Walmart, I have become a convert. So Sam Walton's daughter, Alice, was the beneficiary of all of the corners that were cut over the years by the Walmarts and has inherited a terrific fortune, which some people, like Jeff Bezos, would probably use to build an even better yacht than he already owns. But Alice looked back at her childhood and remembered how isolated and remote she felt there in the northwest corner of Arkansas.
There's no art in Arkansas.
And so she decided to do something about it. And she had some attitudinal obstacles to overcome, because people like me said, why on earth would you put an art museum in the northwest corner of Arkansas? But that was exactly why. So there's a beautiful building, complex of buildings.
Yes, yes. And growing.
Architectural design is spectacular. A lot of it is wood and glass, as befits the setting. And she has accumulated a collection of art all created by American people, which is kind of nice. There weren't any Blessed Virgin Marys that you usually see when you go to Italy and France and go to art museums.
There were no religious ones at all.
So they were all created by artists that we had heard of and included scenes from our own history, a nice portrait of George Washington, and a lot of more current African-American artists, which I was very happy to see. And when we got there, we were surprised that we couldn't get in until 11 o'clock in the morning. We're not real early risers, but we wanted to make a day of it. And we discovered that Alice has set aside the first 2 hours that the museum is in operation for school groups. And she not only sets this aside as time aside for them, she pays for them to come on a school bus. They told us how many miles out the radius of
school. They pay for the school bus.
That she serves. When the kids are there, they have docents especially designed to tell kids about the art that they're seeing on their level. She gives them free lunch. And
she pays for the substitute teachers.
Yeah. So kudos to Alice. And I can also mention, although I don't know much about it, she's also doing a lot of other things for the community. There was some kind of a health center that she was opening
Natural
there.
Health.
And the Crystal Bridges itself was being added onto. It'll be 60% bigger the next time we go there. And we will go there again, because even though we are art nitwits, we had a wonderful time there.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, and she's made up for shortcomings in her own childhood and is trying to give these kids a leg up, because they're living close to this museum. It's quite something to see. And we have often thought about going there, but I guess by design it is kind of out of the way, just a little. And we actually did two things
that were out of the way.
Kind of on the way home this time, we said, well, when are we going to do this? And now is the time. And the other thing was,
we went to Crater of Diamonds State Park in the center of Arkansas.
Am I rich?
Well, no. It was kind of like being a farm worker, is how I felt by the end of the day. This is an amazing spot where at some time, million years ago, a volcano erupted a motherload of diamonds up in the air and sprayed them all over the landscape. And over the years, various people have owned this land and have discovered diamonds, but there were never quite enough of them to really make it into a commercial operation, although people tried.
Yes.
Shysters came and tried to prey on the people who were trying. And the final conclusion is that this is a good place for people to come and dig for diamonds for themselves. The park charges you $15 a day to be there, and you can keep whatever you find, which sounds like an amazing deal.
Well, it is amazing.
So we joined a handful of other lottery winners who were digging around in the soil, ever hopeful, trying to find a diamond.
Yes. And so when you come to this state park, it is 37 acres of plowed up dirt.
They plow it every month. Turn it over,
and you bring your own equipment, or you can rent equipment. Which equipment being a shovel and a pail, and they have water sifters and sifting. Well, anyway, there's quite a lot to it. Well, actually, the way we did it, there's very little to it.
And they show you videos and films of how to do it.
Yes.
So even though you don't feel very competent when you get there.
Right.
And most everybody we ran into was their first time there as well,
yeah.
It sounded like.
But there were 200 or 300 people there,
I would
say.
And it ended up being a family place. I thought, oh, little kids are going to be bored trying to dig for diamonds. But when we were at the beach, little kids were digging in the sand. So here they are digging in the mud.
And now they got the adults involved, too.
And the locals kind of scared us. They said, oh, you're going there, you need your boots. And I thought, I don't have boots along. I've been gone since October,
yeah.
And I did not put boots in the motorhome. But depending on the weather, and we had great weather, it was just hard soil with a little moisture underneath
the
crust.
On the day we were there.
And it was easy to walk down, easy to dig in, and we didn't need boots.
So it was a very interesting experience. It was a beautiful day, as she said, and we just kind of sat there in the sun and dug around with a spade. Now, I got to say that I think I saw some very small diamonds, but they're the
size of match heads, they said.
Oh, no. Size of a grain of sand.
Okay.
And I'm just not going to dig after
what
something like
I
that.
What would I do with
it? But people have found
sizable diamonds.
Sizable diamonds in this park. And so we went there not really expecting to get rich, but just to see what it's all about. And if you have a day, it's worth kind of messing around, because you could come out a winner. Who knows?
But it's nowhere near anything. As the navigationally impaired navigator of this duo that you are listening to, I really struggled with getting us there and getting us to the art museum in Bentonville. And when you're not on expressways, there are many roads, and some of them are more desirable than others. Some of them are more efficient than others. And when you're in an RV, you have to pay attention to the considerations that your rig requires. And we have so many electronic devices and GPSs and maps now, and everyone was giving me a different suggestion on the route. I couldn't wait to get back on the expressway where things are simple.
Yeah, and I got to say that I have for a long time used my Rand McNally RV-oriented GPS, where I put in the size of the rig and that sort of stuff. I really like the Rand McNally software because it has all the campgrounds built in, and I can just type in the name of the campground. I don't have to put in the address, and it knows where to go. it has worked very well for me. But Rand McNally has gotten out of the business of RV GPSs.
Boo-hoo.
So this is 4 or 5 years old. And it, even though it had lifetime maps, it no longer will update its maps. And as we found out at least 3 times on this trip so far, there are new roads that it should know about and it should route you on, but it didn't know about them. And I was going what it thought was cross-country, and that causes big problems. So I'm about to have to replace this Rand McNally GPS, not because it's not working, but because I can't update it. So, dear listener, what do you suggest that I buy? Garmin seems to be the only real option these days.
Which is what I have.
But how about the apps?
I've been out of the business of apps, and certainly in the area where we were, my iPad was depending on cell service, and that would cut in and out, and the apps would be unresponsive and wouldn't move with us, so I had to keep poking them with my finger, and they were fine for research at the beginning of the day, but for me they were not fine for ongoing travel. And there was one time where I was trying to use one when we came north from Gulf Shores, Alabama, that we chose a different route than it recommended and it didn't readjust itself. So far I'm not a fan, but I think some of the problems that I had were caused by me.
Yes, and it is a definite concern that if you need to have online navigation while you're moving, you need to pay attention to how you're getting your service and how good the cell service is. One of the things we found with online maps is that they don't move fast enough for you to make good decisions about your navigation route. Now, one of the things that you can do, of course, is download the maps prior to your trip. And I'm not sure whether we have done that or not, but one of the things that we found out is that most iPads do not have a GPS built in. Therefore, they're relying on the accuracy of Wi-Fi in order to determine where they're located. And that's a problem. I didn't realize this quite and how serious this was for this issue, but if your iPad does not have a cellular connection, in other words, a cellular modem built in, which Martha's doesn't, then it does not have a GPS built in.
But my phone must have one built in.
That's it. Your phone does, but the phone's screen to me is not big
it's
enough to
small.
Do real navigation.
Right.
So we have this dilemma of how to get the maps. Now, RV Wizard, which is a service that's provided for navigation, has the option of getting maps downloaded and using them that way. But you haven't done that.
I did download them, but I couldn't get them to work right.
Uh-huh.
But that probably is me. And the other issue I'm out of practice with is campground finding. We used Allstays primarily, but I've gotten kind of frustrated with that in that all of the recommendations and reviews of actual users tended to be way out of date, even before COVID, and you didn't know whether what they were describing at a campground was still accurate or valid for this time. And so then I went back to RV Wizard?
RV Life. Which is a comprehensive collection of
and
apps.
Seemed to have more campgrounds in it with more current information. But I did that at the very end of this trip, so I can't say for sure whether I really value it or not. And another thing we've been wondering as we've been kind of out of the campground flow with campgrounds is we've heard a lot about people not being able to get into where they want to go.
Yeah.
We, of course, are traveling after spring break is over and before summer vacations for families have begun. So for the most part, we have been able to come and go wherever we felt like going. But Saturday nights were a little bit tricky sometimes. We didn't always end up
but we haven't made any real
where we wanted to be.
Real advance reservations. We've made a reservation a day or two in advance, and it's been fine. We've stayed in COEs. We've stayed in state parks. We've stayed in private parks. And like the park we're in now, 25% full. The state park that we stayed in yesterday was, I don't know, half, maybe half full at best. So I don't know. We hear a lot about campground crowding, and probably during prime season it is crowded and you have to make reservations long in advance, but it's worth it to us to travel when the shoulder season, so that
if you have a choice, it's easier to do it.
Yeah, if you have a choice. But overall, we've been very happy with the campground situation and that we've gotten what we wanted when we wanted it and haven't had to make too many alterations. It started off with a problem that we did have, and that was in Gulf State Park in Alabama, which is one of our very favorite parks.
Impossible to get into during the winter.
Impossible. Even in the shoulder season, I could only get 5 nights in a row in a campground. But this is we've talked about them before, but we got to reiterate that it is just a fabulous
camping
state.
Heaven.
Every site, they have over 400 campsites, all of them with full hookups, all of them level, all of them woodsy night. Well, I don't want to say all woodsy, but very nice.
It's not the camping that you have, the parking lot kind of camping at all.
And they have 28 miles of paved, very nice bike trails or hiking trail if you want to do that.
And some unpaved hiking trails too.
And some and mountain biking type trails. And of course, miles of beach, so that you got to us the best of both, and great weather.
And if you have friends you like to travel with who are not RVers, they also have cabins on site, so you could both be in the park and just have different evening arrangements.
And for kids, they have pool and playgrounds and things.
Tennis court, racquetball.
They have, and we did two ranger-led activities, hikes, and they were very nicely done. So if you have a chance to visit Gulf State, but I keep saying Gulf Shores, but it is in Gulf Shores, Alabama. If you are in the neighborhood, it's worth getting a reservation there and spending some time.
And maybe we'll see you there if we're all incredibly lucky.
Oh, I did want to mention that if you are looking at getting a hotspot, that FMCA has a special deal where with several of the cell carriers that they have a hotspot, which is you can legitimately move from place to place for $60 a month, basically unlimited type of service for your Wi-Fi. I didn't mention that earlier, but I should have. How about a generator? Solar or generator? Which are you going to go with? A lot of people say, well, I'm going to go with solar, but solar gets to be really expensive because you got to buy batteries and stuff to go. You know, you can't run anything off of just a solar panel. That has to go through a battery. And when you're talking about lithium batteries, you're talking about a big expense.
And I'm sitting here on a cloudy day wondering if I would be getting enough power to make it through the evening.
So I would say most people would want to have at least a small generator to go with their solar panels, regardless of whether they would rely on them full time. Years ago, when we had our trailer, we bought the little Yamaha 2000, which was state-of-the-art inverter generator at the time, and it cost something around $1,000.
Ooh. Did we pay that much for that?
Yeah, because we used it quite a lot, and it's at home right now as our home backup generator.
If we have a power failure.
But when you're talking about $1,000, you're talking about just a little bit of money. And 2,000 watts is enough to do a little bit of... My wife is throttled under 3,000.
Well, and at home when we have a storm, it keeps the fridge and the freezer going, and we can watch TV and turn on a light.
Right. But it doesn't do a lot. Now, cheap imitators have come along since that time, and I don't know. I always am skeptical, and I watched a video done by Sean from the Long Long Honeymoon. I've followed them for years. They travel around in their Airstream, and he said, this company has been after me to do a review of their new generator, their new inverter generator, and the specs on it are just almost unbelievable.
Too good to be true.
But I said, after a year of them pestering me, I said, okay. So he did the review, and I watched it, and he was blown away. And I got to say that it is quite a machine.
Well, we were at Camping World.
We looked at the generators that they had there, and they have the Yamahas and the Champions and the Hondas, and we picked up a 3,000-watt one, and Martha couldn't...
And we couldn't pick it up.
Yeah, you can't pick it up. The Honda one cost $2,300. So, Sean looked at this off-brand from China, needless to say, available on Amazon, needless to say. But this generator, which of course you'll find a link to in the RV Navigator notes, and I can't even pronounce the name, but it's like Maxar, something like that. Anyway, this is a 3,000-watt generator.
Max eating rods.
3,000-watt generator. It weighs 50 pounds and costs $479.
Wow.
Wow. And he tested it, and it is what it says it is. He was able to pick it up. Martha couldn't even pick up a 3,000. I couldn't pick up. They usually weigh over 100 pounds. And this one is 47 pounds. It is a little bit noisier, but, you know, that's a kind of a thing that you can put aside. It has all the connections that you would want. It has a standard 30-amp plug in it.
Produces.
I sound like I'm buying one of these, but I'm not going to buy one. I don't
produces
think.
Pure sine wave.
Pure sine wave. Yeah, it's everything that you would want in a generator, and it's small and light for RV use. And at $500, it kind of makes solar obsolete. I don't know. It's not say obsolete, but it makes it less viable because solar panels are going to cost you that plus a lot more. So.
If you try one out, let us know if you like it as much as the honeymoon guy did. When he reviewed it.
Yeah, it's worth at least watch the video and see what you think.
And while we're talking about gadgets, as we said, we've been gone from home a long time, and we've been schlepping around bug spray for a long time. We schlepped it to Asia, never used it.
Yep.
Schlepped it to Brazil, never used it. Got into central Arkansas and were besieged with houseflies. And this got me more interested in bug removal once again, because you don't want them flying in your nose and mouth while you're trying to sleep. And this looks like a cool device that you can use inside and outside your house. No chemicals.
Well, this is a bug zapper.
Yes.
But the cool thing about this bug zapper is that it is battery powered and USB charged. So it is portable. So you can just kind of locate it any place you are, and you take it outside, put it on the picnic table, and it apparently works quite well, according to the reviews that I've read. It's called the
Q Remove.
Thanks. Portable Bug Zapper.
And it has a low purple light that attracts the bugs. It doesn't look like something you would hike with, though, right?
No,
it's something
no,
you would put
no,
it in
no.
an area, in
right,
your rig
right.
or outside by your picnic table. And it attracts all the bugs and sucks them in. And
it lasts for 6 hours on one battery charge, suitable for indoor or outdoor use. And you can hang it up and...
Has a collection device and throw the bugs in the trash.
Yeah.
So non-toxic, chemical, and radiation-free. So if you buy one before we do, because we're not planning on being near any more bugs for a while, let us know if you like it.
But we never know. At home, you might find a lot of bugs.
Houseflies in my house.
We're going to have cicada season when
That's
we get
right.
home.
That's right. I don't know if it would work with those. Those are big.
It would be quite a zap.
Explode the whole device.
There are several new features with Apple Maps. You know, we're talking about using the navigation of on your phone, which I can't really recommend. But with that said, Apple Maps does allow you to now download the maps and have them on your phone so that you don't have to depend on your cell service in order to navigate, which is very nice. They also have additional trail information. And
they have up-to-date information on EV charging stations, which is an ongoing problem.
And
enhanced features in major cities, features like detailed 3D landmarks, road markings, elevation levels, public transit routes make it easy to get where you're going within a big city, whether you're walking or driving.
So you might want to consider using Apple Maps to do your navigation, but please let us know how it goes, because we are looking for a new navigational system.
We haven't tried it ourselves.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's talk about thermal windows. Thermal pane windows, you know, having just had our house windows replaced for just a few bucks, our RV has real thermal pane windows, but we're finding that RVs as a whole talk about having thermal windows, but they're not thermal windows.
Those cheaters.
We have two panes of glass and a space between them that's filled with air. And
which eventually leaks.
Which we are finding out that we're going to have to. We have a couple of windows that have leaked, and that's how you can tell that you have real thermal pane
and
windows.
And one of them we are replacing again.
which we don't want to talk about. But yes, we are replacing for the second time. But we find that many advertisements for thermopane windows in RVs are just two panes of glass that have been stuck together, and they don't have the benefits of the thermal air in between. Because one of the things we find with in this coach is that they're not only do they help with the heat and the moisture, we don't get moisture
sound
on the windows. The sound, right? Like right now, we're near
during cicada season.
During cicada. We are apparently in the heart of cicada land, and we're having a double cicada outing in the near future in May.
I'm so excited.
So we're going to have to, we'll have, start off the next podcast with
cicada recordings.
The June podcast will have feature cicadas. We're not going to have anything to talk about because we're going to be at home.
No, that's not true. As we sit here in Kansas City,
really?
We are on our way to Dubuque, Iowa, which we talked about back in January or February, I think it was.
We had the interview.
When we met Lisa Maurer, the CEO of Maurer RV Upholstery, who has bought all the plans for slip covering all the typical RV
from Flexsteel
furniture that Flexsteel used to produce, and she has sewed us a new couch cover, and we are on our way to Dubuque to get it installed on our coach, removing one of the many repair things that are on our punch list as we travel home.
Our couch has deteriorated dramatically even since they sat on it in January. Oh, it is just shredding, and we don't ever use it. It's really sad to see. But we have hope. For a few bucks, we're going to have it totally recovered and fixed.
What I've decided is that the cheap fabric that they used loses its flexibility. So when you sit on a couch, the cushion compresses and comes out again, and that's what it cannot handle. There's a place on top there where I lean when I close the window curtains or the window shades, and because I lean on it, it has to flex, and that's where it's peeling. So that was the problem. But whatever it was, it should not be happening. We pay enough for these coaches. They should have put in good stuff in the first place, and we hope to have a glowing report of our experience in Dubuque. Bauer Upholstery has a parking lot where we can stay overnight while we wait to get this replacement done.
And it's 7 a.m. They start repairing
the idea of
sofa.
Getting a couch in and out of our door is a bit daunting to me, but I'm sure they know what they're doing.
So this will be the exciting event for the... Oh, you're right. It is going to be interesting.
Yes.
And we'll have pictures and... Oh, wow.
And I'm sure there are other people out there with this problem.
We know that they're keeping this place in business.
It's industry-wide.
Yes. So, anyway, we talked about that quite a lot on that podcast, but the follow-up is about to happen. So I guess that means that we're about at the end of this month's podcast, and will we see you in a campground near us? No. We will be at home most of...
Is it July when we're going?
Yeah.
To Indiana?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So that will be the update with the solar panels and the lithium batteries.
And our annual trip to the Indiana Dunes State Park.
That'll be fun. So we will turn it over to next month and say adios for now.
Happy travels. Thanks for listening. Stay in touch.